Blog Talk Radio.
The dark brown shades of my skin. That splash against my hollow bones, that rocks my soul. Oh, 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 oh. Looking back over my false dreams that I once knew, wondering why my dreams never came true. Is it because I'm black? Somebody tell me, what can I do? Oh, Lord. Oh, something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black? Yeah. In this world of no pity, I was raised in the ghettos of the city. Yeah, oh Lord. Mama, she worked so hard to earn every penny. Yeah, oh Lord. Something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black?
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see
man you're about to see in here, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing on. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven rain, rain with the harmony, oh, let our rejoicing rise high, loud as the Georgia.
Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela began his life herding sheep and cattle in the rolling hills of South Africa's Eastern Cape. In his autobiography, part of which was written secretly while in prison, Mandela wrote, "I was not born with a hunger to be free. I was born free. Free in every way that I could know. Free to run in the fields near my mother's hut. Free to swim in the clear stream that ran through my village. Free to roast mealies under the stars and ride the broad backs of slow-moving bulls. It was only when I began to learn that my boyhood freedom was an illusion, when I discovered as a young man that my freedom had already been taken from me, that I began to hunger for it." Nelson Mandela's given name, Rolihlahla, literally means tugging at the branches of a tree. But at school, he was given the name of another famous leader.
When I went to school, the lady teacher, Miss Mdingane, asked, "What is your name?" I told her my African name, Rolihlahla. She says, "No, I don't want that one. You must have a Christian name." So I say, "No, I don't have one." She says, "You are from today, you are going to be Nelson."
So henceforth, he would be known to the world as Nelson Mandela. As the son of a chief, Nelson Mandela had access to the best education available to black people in South Africa at the time, studying at Fort Hare University, where he first became involved in student protest. His refusal to accept injustice, unfairness, and inequality would last a lifetime. South Africa, 1941. In his early 20s, Nelson Mandela moved to Johannesburg, where he first encountered the racial discrimination that would later become entrenched in law by the apartheid government. Working on the mines, and later as a clerk in a law firm, Mandela pursued his law studies and joined the African National Congress, the oldest black political organization in South Africa.
It was when I came into the African National Congress that I realized that Costas are only a part of the African people. That the task of the ANC was to unite the African people and out of them build a nation.
In 1948, the nationalist government was voted into power by the white electorate in South Africa, and the battle lines were clearly drawn.
Comrade Oliver said, well, I like this, because we now know we have an enemy in power, and I think that we're going to have a better opportunity of mobilizing our people.
Our policy is one which is called by an Afrikaans word, apartheid. And I'm afraid that has been misunderstood so often. It could just as easily, and perhaps much better, be described as a policy of good neighborliness.
In 1955, the ANC and other organizations called upon people of all races to gather in Kliptown to approve the Freedom Charter, a blueprint for a free, democratic, and multiracial South Africa, in which all races would be treated equally. Nelson Mandela, one of the chief organizers of the gathering, was banned by the government from attending and was forced to watch proceedings from the sidelines. In 1956, the organizers of the Freedom Charter and other leaders in the Congress movement were charged with high treason. The trial was specifically designed to occupy the opposition and keep them out of politics. It dragged on for 4.5 years, and it would be another 40 years before the Freedom Charter finally bore fruit. South Africa, 1960, Sharpeville, a black township in the industrial area south of Johannesburg. A peaceful crowd gathered to protest against the past laws was shot at by police. 69 people died. The nationalist government imposed martial law. All opposition was banned and thousands were jailed. When it became clear that all means of peaceful negotiation had been exhausted, Mandela went underground to lead the armed struggle.
We have made it very clear in our policy that South Africa is a country of many races. There is room for all the various races in this country. There are many people who feel that it is useless and futile for us to continue talking peace and non-violence against a government whose reply is only savage attacks on an unarmed and defenseless people.
Key government installations were targeted for sabotage. Mandela became known as the Black Pimpernel. In 1962, Mandela was captured, charged with leaving the country illegally, and sentenced to imprisonment for 5 years. Shortly afterwards, his ANC comrades were captured with evidence which incriminated Mandela. He returned to court for the Rivonia trial, where he and 8 others faced a possible death penalty.
The very speech which was made by Nelson consolidated the spirit of the people outside, because it was a defiant spirit.
I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the idea of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunity. It is an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if need be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die.
When Nelson Mandela and several of his colleagues were sentenced to life imprisonment in 1964, the political convicts were sent to Robben Island, the bleak island prison off the Western Cape Coast. Nelson Mandela was 45 years old when he became prisoner number 466 of 1964. He would be in his early 70s before he would again be a free man. Forced to perform futile hard labor in a lime quarry, the prisoners refused to be broken. Far from being diminished, Mandela's moral leadership and stature continued to grow while he was in prison. His young wife, Winnie, continued to be an inspiration to the struggle.
That day is not far when we shall lead you to freedom. Amanda!
Amanda! Amanda! Away to power to the people. But the struggle against apartheid would continue for another quarter century. While Nelson Mandela and his co-accused served life sentences on Robben Island, other leaders of all races and in all spheres campaigned for change. Many faced imprisonment or exile. And around the world, ordinary people showed their horror of apartheid and their support for the struggle.
The purpose, friends, of this boycott is for the people of Britain to register on the widest possible scale their passionate protest against an evil and repulsive doctrine which says that a man's legal status, a man's political rights, a man's economic opportunities, a man's social position shall depend solely upon the color of his skin.
But in 1976, Soweto school children marched in protest and townships around the country erupted in violence. It was the beginning of the end for apartheid, but the struggle dragged on for more than a decade as the Afrikaner nationalist government clung to power.
I've been lenient and patient. Don't push us too far.
In the late 1980s, amid a tide of world pressure, the South African government was forced to accept the inevitable and began dismantling apartheid. In 1990, at the age of 71, Mandela was released unconditionally.
I stand here before you not as a prophet, but as a humble servant of you, the people. I place the remaining years of my life in your hands.
After leading negotiations for a new South Africa, Nelson Mandela cast his vote in the first free and democratic elections and became the country's first black president.
Never, never, and never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience the oppression of one by another.
But this is the end of freedom.
For the duration of his presidential term, and throughout what should have been a well-earned retirement, he has worked tirelessly to entrench the ideals he has so long stood for, becoming universally revered as an icon of leadership and humanity.
When I told one of my advisors a few months ago that I wanted to retire, he growled at me, quote,
"We're tired of beating our head against the wall and working with someone else. Say it loud.
Say it loud, 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 say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud, I'm black and I'm proud, I'm black and I'm proud. Oh, good morning. I mean, a lot of proud black people in the country this morning. A lot of proud people in the country this morning. Our South African people are celebrating the death of Nelson Mandela. Africans, as used to be the African people, whoever they was in the diaspora, took death a little different from most Europeans in other countries, but most Americans have taken on the whole attitude of death and funerals and spirit. They have adopted the captures, the European way of mourning. But, you know, if you've been to an African funeral, or you understand the African tradition, as they celebrate, do you understand spirit? I had the privilege of going to the Ashanti King's funeral in Ghana. They had him out, I think, about a month or so. And the different levels of funerals they had, and different tribes of the president, different folks who came when they finally had the public funeral. And it was quite a time later. But it's the spirit and the respect that they play to the elders and to their dead. There's respect. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on. And Mandela will eventually be sent to be buried and have a final funeral from his tribe and his homeland. And those of you who are from the South, remember that. Wherever you was, you always would send me home and bury me. That was part of an African tradition without realizing what that was. That was to go back to your people and to be buried with your people because that was part of the African tradition. Later on, we got bury me whoever I die or burn me. It doesn't matter. When you're dead, you're gone. They're not understanding the spirituality of it all. But the African people are very spiritual people in terms of understanding what and who God is. That not to limit God to just a man, that God is all. He's the sun, he's the moon, he's the water. The spirit is the sun, the moon, the water. Whatever it is that is into existence, the birds, the flowers, the wind, is God, and that we are a God made in his image and the spirit. And African people always worship nature and worship the spirit of God. It's just that we kind of got away. That's what we used to sing this song, "Come On In The Room." That meant we wanted the spirit to come in. I understand that when President Nelson Mandela, I must say, made his transition, they have to go get the elders, bring the elders in, and the elders close the eyes. They call it the closing of the eyes, where the elders close the eyes. And then the elders talk to the president or whoever the death was, and they would have went to the mortuary with him. He's like going with that spirit and taking that spirit on. That's why we have repasts, because it's a happy spirit to allow the spirit to go on to the universe, to the heavens, to the spirit of it all. We are a spiritual people. Even in the King James Version of the Bible, it said, "Worship me in spirit and in truth." It didn't say anything about all this old religion stuff or who you were or what you were. You worship me in spirit and in truth. So certainly we can worship this man in spirit and in truth. His spirit will certainly live on. And we're going to talk about the truth of Mandela and that struggle today. We've seen a lot of stuff. You know, I told you that Ron Emanuel said in his book, he who framed the discussion win and he who be framed to lose. And right now the discussion of Mandela is being framed in such a way that you will forget that he was a freedom fighter. And you almost forget all of the slaughter. I think CNN might have done a wonderful piece on him. It's Somebody told me MSNBC did one, too. I missed it. I'm going to try and find it. But where they really began to show some of it. And we're going to be discussing today with Jerry Herman, a friend of mine who worked in South Africa. And really Angola, all over the African continent. But he also was part of this movement in Chicago with us with Dr. King. He used to be a teacher in Chicago. I mobilized the teachers for Dr. King. It was very close when Dick Gregory first got up, all involved in the movement. He was very close with Dick Gregory. But more than that, he is a freedom fighter. So we reached out to Jerry, and we told him we want to talk to him. So I want you to call your friends and let them know that we're going to have a very special guest on. As we examine South Africa before and after Mandela, we want to talk about that and what's going on with the people South Africa. We also want to talk about Winnie. We cannot discuss Mandela, and I want to thank once again CNN again for had Winnie on all of the pictures. I first met Winnie when she was moving around raising money and fighting for her husband, talking about liberation. And the last time, not the last time, but because the last time First Lady Winnie Mandela and I was together was at the Salaam with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, when he brought her here to honor her after she had been put out of, when South African government had moved on her after her husband had gotten out. But before that, the last fundraiser discussion that we were together was in Atlanta at the SCLC Women, Mrs. Lowry, and SCLC Women had Winnie in Atlanta as they was raising money and raising the flag and fighting for Nelson Mandela to bring some kind of attention and make sure that we helped and kept that movement that she had going with her children, the health programs, all those programs that Winnie Mandela had going on, plus the liberation of her husband. So that was the last time we were together working on that was in Atlanta with Sister Lara, who have made her transition and going on to the heavens. So we cannot talk about Mandela, President Mandela, without talking about Winnie Mandela. And women, if you're out there listening, can you imagine what it is to have you be a young bride and your husband is put in jail and you have to raise your children and you have to keep that movement going? And they didn't just jail Mandela because he was some peaceful person walking around. Mandela, they were fighting for liberation. And they were labeled a lot of things. A lot of things, as Cliff was saying the other day, that the reason George Ryan was able to meet with Mandela is because Castro called. Castro was an ally of Mandela. So was Gaddafi. The president was very upset with what happened to Gaddafi, and I think he made a statement about what happened to Gaddafi. But you had a lot of he was a freedom fighter and liberator. One of the few presidents that was elected and that was set, I was someone President Mandela. When I said a president job, I don't want to just call him Nelson Mandela. Everybody just gave me a little note to make sure I'm talking about President Mandela, not just Mandela, Nelson Mandela, the former president of South Africa. But, so he was a freedom fighter. Those of us who lived through that movement will understand. Y'all remember the necktie? Give them suckers a necktie when they worked with the opposition. Things was getting kind of deep. I know Conrad and all of them was demonstrating at the Council of South Africa, and people were talking about them. I remember when Danny got arrested, and Conrad and got arrested. People were talking about them so bad, all this stuff. We supporting this evil man. And here was a man that was fighting for the liberation of his people who got arrested, but the ANC and the PAC was evil people for giving any kind of resistance. And as an African people, whether we were colonized on the island, on the continent, or enslaved in the diaspora, we have always been taught to, not to fight back. It'll be all right. But what I want to say is that we're going to be discussing Nelson Mandela, President Nelson Mandela, and we're going to be discussing the state of South Africa right now in terms of what happened with that constitution. That constitution was written, and it was written very bad for black people. the blacks right now, we're going to be talking about that with Jerry. 16% of the people own 80% of the land. All the things that went on and all the things that's going on. And my hat's off to Nelson Mandela for stepping down, not being pushed out. I was sitting there forever. He was there. He came out. He stepped out. And then he began to move around. And he wasn't pleased with what was going on with the countrymen and what was going on out there. So we are going to be discussing the whole question of South Africa and where it was and where it is now. I don't know if anybody anywhere certainly would say, well, it's all right. They're just such a nice person. They forgave. No, because you look at a person and see their illness and what they've done do not mean that you are not going to continue that struggle. And they're putting it in the context, well, oh, he forgave and he brought his jailers in and he did this and he did that. That was a nonviolent move. It also was a political move. I mean, you got to bring the country together. You put on a jersey, you got to bring the country together. But if you notice, and that's interesting, most of the coverage to show you how much that we have, we don't have that many black people in television anymore, black people in the media, because most of the coverage was told through the eyes of some other people. We didn't have that many black people giving the coverage of Nelson Mandela. So we will be discussing him, President Nelson Mandela, whom I had the opportunity to work with his wife and to meet with him when he was here. I was on Channel 9, and they asked me, well, what did you and Mandela talk about when we were talking? Well, we really talked about Harold Washington, Dr. King, because he understood I had worked with Dr. King, and he also knew that I had kind of moved around a little bit with Winnie. A very strong man. And the media asked me, were you in awe of him? I said, no, I was not in awe of him. You be in awe of somebody if you haven't done anything yourself or you don't support what they were doing. I was proud of him and encouraged by him, the suffering that he did. And are we willing to suffer or die for what we believe in? And so I was encouraged by him, not in awe of him, because you got to remember I was with Dr. King and other people. When you're in awe, it's because you really have not been around that kind or you're not willing. And we're going to discuss the parallel between South Africa and what's going on here in Chicago and in America at the same time, how we are treated and what happens to us and what we expected to do about it, because the economics of South Africa is still going on and blacks in South Africa are not participating in the economics of South Africa. And those things have to change the same way it is here. But we are proud of Nelson Mandela. One other thing before I take my break is that, you know, I've talked to many people over the last few days. Just talk to them. You have an opportunity to be a Nelson Mandela wherever you are in the country, in the world. What are you willing to fight for, to give up, to redeem for? When we look at the fact that our schools are, our children are failing in school, this education system stinks, our kids, our children are not, our people are not employed, housing and all the things. And there are people like the Harold Washington Cultures and other things that need our children, our stuff, that say, are you willing to step up and to help and to work with that? Or do you do what everybody did when they thought Mandela was hands off? You run and hide. And as a people, we cannot keep hiding until we think it's all right. When the master says it's all right to lay hands on someone, you knock the people down who were there fighting in the trenches to say, I'm here, I'm laying hands. So you have to be real careful about that. And most folks, you know, do you have the courage? Do you have the courage? When I think of Mandela, it's a profile in courage. President Mandela, great man, a man willing to die. Dr. King said, if you haven't found something to die for, you're not fit to live. And we're going to be playing some music from Hugh Masekela. We're going to be playing some music from Mary McKeeba, Nina Simone. And also we're going to be playing some music from different folks. Like, you know that Stevie Wonder has some music out about Mandela. And we're going to come back and talk about the student movement. And if you're out there, and those of you know and who was involved in that student movement here in Chicago when we brought the South African students here to begin to fight for against apartheid, because a lot of you was involved. I don't know all of your names. And if you're out there and you're still here and you participate, you should call us too, because that was a hell of a movement that we did when we brought all the South African students here. And we was at the Duncan YMCA pulling them together at the retreat. And that was the first time I got an opportunity to see how the British CIA operate. Because, baby, They were inside that retreat, and they were making sure that we didn't mobilize. And if you remember the name Ruachiri, if anybody out there remember Chiri, please call in and let's talk about it, because he's one of the mobilizers of helping us with the students. Joe Tadarera, one of them strong leaders. He was as strong as Mandela in South Africa, who had to come on the underground and come over here. He was studying at the University of Madison, Wisconsin. And he was studying to be a scientist. So if you got some thoughts about what you did, how you played a role in it, and also that student movement that we were dealing with and with South Africa. We brought all of the South African students from all over the world outside of South Africa, and we brought them into Chicago. And we were able to do that because of Mary McKeeba, Harry Belafonte, Cindy Portier, Nipsey Russell, and a lot of other people who helped us bring them here so that we could begin to look at, to mobilize, and to organize a struggle against apartheid to go to South Africa. And we have to thank Jane Bevels for that also. And that was in 1967 when we began to get ready to do a South African movement. You listen to Talk of Chicago 69 WVON. Our number is 773-591-6090. We are streaming live, www.wvon.com. We're also on iHeart Radio. You can take us wherever you go. We're on blackplanet.com, Facebook. We're on Facebook, Twitter. What I want you to do, because this is going to be a teaching moment, I'm going to spend a few moments here, and then I'm going to get Jerry on the line. So get your people, because Jerry is a former teacher, and we're going to really talk about it. And, you know, some folks got, it's interesting, because I asked some folks, have you been to the continent? No. But they got all of these things in their mind about the continent, and they've not been to the continent. I heard Perry say she was going to Senegal. I'm going to talk to her. I've been to Senegal several times, so I'm going to talk to Perry. But get your coffee, get your tea. Hey, y'all, I'm not going to be gone long. You come on back and talk to me. I'll be right back.
The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Perry Small.
Next week on the Perry Small Show, we'll have our monthly Go Somewhere and Sit Down segment. Also, we're...
This is Mandela's first television interview. I asked him what it was that the African really wanted.
The Africans want the franchise on the basis of one man, one vote. They want political independence.
Do you see Africans being able to develop in this country without the European being pushed out?
We have made it very clear in our policy that South Africa is a country of many races. There is room for all the various races in this country.
Are there many educated Africans in South Africa?
Yes. We have a large number of Africans who are educated and who are taking part in the political struggles of the African people. The question of education has nothing to do with the question of the vote. On numerous occasions, it has been proved in history that people can enjoy the vote even if they have no education. Of course, we desire education, and we think it's a good thing. But you don't have to have education in order to know that you want certain fundamental rights, you have got aspirations, you have got claims. It has nothing to do with education whatsoever.
And no money for to go down there.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on,
yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes.
When a man has done what he conceives to be his duty to his people and his country, he can rest in peace. I believe I have made that effort. And that is therefore why I will sleep for the eternity.
Nelson Mandela, who led the emancipation of South Africa from white minority rule and served as his country's first black president, became an international symbol of dignity and forbearance. Mr. Mandela's quest for freedom led from the court of tribal royalty to the Liberation Underground, to a prison rock quarry, and finally, to the presidential suite of Africa's wealthiest country.
The central goal was that South Africa would be ruled by South Africans. It was the cause of his life, and he achieved it.
Talk of Chicago, 1690, WVON.
Mandela first came to the world's attention while serving a life prison sentence for sabotage and conspiracy to overthrow the state. He would become the personification of opposition to South Africa's brutal apartheid regime.
Apartheid was a system that was set up by the National Party government, an extremely formal race-based division of the country. Apartheid literally in the Afrikaans language means apartness. It means that the races were not meant to live together.
In the early 1960s, Mandela led the ANC, the African National Congress, on a road of armed insurrection against the apartheid regime. It would lead to his eventual arrest on charges of conspiracy to overthrow the state. Mandela's legend grew when he arrived at his trial wearing traditional Xhosa leopard skin garb to underscore that he was an African entering a white man's jurisdiction. Mandela's...
Now we're the man of the town to do things for ourselves. We're tired of beating our head against the wall and working for someone else. Say it now!
Say it loud. Good morning, y'all. Wake up. All you revolutionaries, all you people who just admired Mandela so much, tell me what your act of defiance is going to be this morning to remember Mandela. What are you going to do in terms of your community? What are you willing to give after you get through living vicariously through him? What are you going to be willing to give? As I talked earlier this morning, I don't know if you heard it because I want to go to the phone because I got to get Jerry in a minute. About that movement in the South African movement and the movement, the revolutionary movement all over the continent, all over the country, really. But I don't mind them talking about his struggle, but to pitch this thing, this person that forgave and was so this and so that and never no more, and why they're still walking away with all the stuff. Mandela was too shrewd for that. Anybody who gave most of their life got more sense than that, and I guarantee you to bring the jailers and all them folk together was was loving, political, and he understood he was president of the whole country. I was like saying, I'm president of the country, and that's what it is, and that's what you have to deal with. Greg, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, daughter. How you doing?
I'm fine.
You know what? I was just telling your daughter, I want to talk about the revolutionary Nelson Mandela, because it's easy to they want to talk about the feel good Nelson
Yeah, they
Mandela.
They want to frame it. They we talk about doing the they was letting them out of jail because of the necktie. They was putting the necktie around these Negroes' necks who was riding there working against them. It was nothing for them to put the necktie on them.
When there you go.
You remember the necktie?
Yes, that's the problem. You know, I Roland Martin did a good segment. They did a nice segment on him too. You know, and TV1 did 3 hours yesterday. Hit nothing but Nelson Mandela just about almost three hours.
Well, I'm going to go back and find it.
Yes, it was beautiful, Dorothy. But, you know, I want to talk about Nelson Mandela when now in 1961 when 69 people on a peaceful march were slaughtered. And nobody wants to talk about that.
They don't want to talk about the Holocaust that happened over there in South Africa. And also, you know, all this stuff is connected to the transatlantic slave and all the other stuff. You know, the Jews would never say to Hitler, it's all right. The Jews would never say to Hitler, we're not. They're still looking for folks who they thought that had something to do with the slaughter.
But hold it. Here's a history story for everybody. When every country wouldn't give South Africa any weapons, Israel did. That's my note for the day. Israel was the only country that was sending military weapons over there to South Africa.
I don't know. I got to check that out because, you know, Israel's hanging also with the white countries because they got, you know, but you don't know Castro was very involved. And then go. What I want you to do is listen to Jerry Herman because he was very involved in this African struggle. He spent a lot of time over in South Africa even before Mandela got out. So we're going to have him on. So I want you to listen. He had hands on. Okay?
Have a good one, Dorothy.
Thank you. I'm going to play two beautiful sisters because the women played a very important role in the struggle for liberation in South Africa. So we're going to play Nina Simone, our beloved sister, and you all don't know, do you know, Mary McKeever, Pate Pate, hey, you know what y'all, she was a revolutionary. That's Mary McKeever and Nina Simone. Ebony, come here. It's our music, y'all. That spirit is the same throughout the diaspora. So when they take our music and our spirit, they're taking part of us. If you feel that spirit the same way we move and sing and dance, they stop us from dancing, music, and singing.
I see my light come shining from the west down to the east.
Nina Simone and Mary McKeever, y'all.
Any day now, anywhere now, I shall be
met Mary McKeever. She was fighting for the liberation of South Africa. They banded up from South Africa.
In this lonely crowd is a man who swears not to play.
Please, Mr. Herman.
All day long I hear him cry.
They've taken away my song. They've taken away our music, y'all. They've taken it away from us. She sounds like a sister from Alabama.
They say every man needs protection.
But the blues.
They say every man must fall.
She's talking Mandela.
So I swear I see my reflection.
Come on, Nina. Relieved, that means the Simone and Mary McKeever. Gotta see the light, y'all.
From the west down to the
be relieved, shall be relieved. That's Nina Simone. Yeah. Mary McKeever, freedom fighter. Mary McKeever was part of that struggle, and she helped us when we got the student. Mary McKeever, freedom fighter, whom they banded from South Africa. Mary McKeeba, they banned her from South Africa. I'm going to take one more call, then I'm going to go to, I think Jerry's on the line because I want to give him just a few minutes before we take a break and give you an idea of what we're going to do. Ms. Huntington, a few seconds.
Good morning, Alderman.
Good morning. A few seconds, and I'm bringing Jerry up.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you for that beautiful life lesson on Nelson Mandela that you gave us on Cliff's show.
You're welcome.
I tell you, I am really so proud of Mr. Mandela and his wife, Winnie. They fought for a cause, and I remember when we used to march for free South Africa, free Mandela, and stop the divesting in South Africa. I heard the president yesterday say that Mr. Mandela was such a hero to him. And I think that if he's going to do as Mr. Mandela has done, he should bring back H.R. 40 and do things for his people.
I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Ooh, Ms. Huntington say, be a freedom fighter. Hey, Mandela. I'm going to talk to Jerry Herman right now because I want to give him a few minutes up before we left. Just before I go into the break, Courtney, I'm going to have that statement by Ebony coming here, Mayor McKeever. But I'm going to talk to a very dear friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, who was a freedom fighter. You know, we were talking the other day, and I said, how you doing there, Jerry? He said, I'm doing fine. He said, you're free, aren't you? When you're free, you know, you have a sense of freedom and a sense of being. When you're free, I'm adding to what he said at Libin, but I know this young man has been a freedom fighter. I met him when we came to Chicago with Dr. King. He was teaching at Forestville, very young man. And Jerry got involved in this movement, and he have not turned it loose, organized the Teachers Club. He was working with Dick Gregory, but he's been a freedom fighter all over the country, all over the world. When you hear us talking, and we're going to get into it at the 7 o'clock hour, about that whole struggle of when we talked about holding up the sanctions in South Africa, that we should not lift them. Jerry played an instrumental role in, sister, what you going to do about it? So we did something about it, we tried to do. But Jerry has been very involved, and I think he's an expert. He's one of the experts that have traveled, and we're going to bring some sense to what's going on in South Africa. But so I wanted him to say something to you just for a few minutes before we took our break, and then he'll be back. Good morning, Jerry.
Morning, Dorothy Wright Tillman.
Well, thank you, my friend, Dorothy Wright. You know, he's really a friend to say Dorothy Wright. You know, when Nelson Mandela made his transition to go to the great spirits, the first person I thought about was you because I know what a great role that you played, not just in South Africa and Angola, all over the place, but all over Africa. Your life work and what you've done in terms of Africa, the continent, and also how you worked on behalf of the diaspora and for human rights period around the globe.
Well, I consider it a small contribution that I made, and part of that which I brought to the anti-apartheid movement was having been an organizer with the civil rights movement in both Savannah and Chicago and a couple other places in this country. I mean, I had that little expertise of how to kind of bring people together and give them a sense of struggle, and mm-hmm. So that's what I contribute. Small.
No, your contribution was very, not small, dear. It was very, to me, very large and very important. You know, what was some of the stuff you did in Savannah? I know what you did in Chicago.
Well, we worked in Chatham County with voter registration.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, young folks trying to do what we could, being a little crazy and taking on the system, not fully understanding the viciousness of the powers, the white powers in and around Savannah, in Chatham County, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think made some impact because that was a center of struggle in the South, as
right.
You know. Jose Williams was, first time I met him,
yes.
Was there because he was the leader of the voter registration drive.
Yes.
If folks might know, well, do know who Jose is, a powerful personality in the SCLC and the freedom movement generally.
Well, you know, it's interesting because those people who were really working, like Jose and Bevel and a lot of other field, who was field secretaries, who really was over those different struggles in those different counties, people don't really talk about them. They try to make it, as with Mandela, the same as with Dr. King, that there was a figure there that carried this movement, and they just waved their hands like a wand, and everything changed, not the people in the trenches like you working with people like Jose and my work and people like Bevel. They don't see that.
Yeah, that, and that's unfortunate because in Chicago now you've got a lot of folks who were toiling in the vineyards, in the ditches of organizing people, and they are the ones who brought it to fruition, made it happen, if you will, put
right.
the folks in the streets.
Right.
So, yeah, it's unfortunate. Al Sampson, Reverend there in the city,
mm-hmm.
Bevel, who's now passed. I mean, a whole lot of people, Al Raby, and these are names that maybe a lot of the young folks are not tuned into, but these are significant, powerful people who refuse to give up.
Right. They were the Mandelas of Chicago. So, Jerry, I just wanted people to understand that we're going to be talking about the apartheid movement in South Africa, and we're going to really get into it. I want to talk about winning. I want to talk about how it is today in South Africa in terms of the unemployment, how high the unemployment, the land question, and some of the things to get. I want you to be the teacher that you are when we come back on the other side of the break. So I just wanted them to get a feel for you because they're telling me that I got to take a break. So I want you to hold on. This is Dorothy Wright Tillman in Chicago. We'll talk coffee, tea, and the conversation with me. Every Saturday morning from 6 to 8, we have Jerry Herman, a great
when a man
that's on the phone. And we're going to be talking about Mandela and about the struggle and about Africa, period, about the diaspora, but about South Africa in particular. So I want you to wake up everybody and call everybody. Tell them our 7 o'clock hour is going to be really stuffy. Our number is 773-591-1690. We're streaming live on www.wvon.com. We on Facebook. We on iHeartRadio. You can carry us wherever you are. We on www.wvon.com. We're also on tweeting. And we on group Facebook. I want you to get your coffee, get your tea. And this is Nina Simone, y'all. Not Nina Simone. This is Mary McKeever. You don't have Mary McKeever? Okay, get your coffee, get your tea, and come on back to me. If you're a freedom fighter, wake up the rest of the freedom fighter. If you're not, come on back and listen to me. Maybe you'll be one when we go off. Be right back.
...ruled by South Africans. It was the cause of his life, and he achieved it.
Mandela first came to the world's attention while serving a life prison sentence for sabotage and conspiracy to overthrow the state. He would become the personification of opposition to South Africa's brutal apartheid regime.
Apartheid was a system that was set up by the National Party government, an extremely formal race-based division of the country. Apartheid literally in the Afrikaans language means apartness. It means that the races were not meant to live together.
In the early 1960s, Mandela led the ANC, the African National Congress, on a road of armed insurrection against the apartheid regime. It would lead to his eventual arrest on charges of conspiracy to overthrow the state. Mandela's legend grew when he arrived at his trial wearing traditional Xhosa leopard skin garb to underscore that he was an African entering a white man's jurisdiction. Mandela's courtroom speech was one of the most eloquent of his life.
I have cherished the idea of a democratic and free society in which all persons will live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an idea for which I hope to live for. But my Lord, if it needs be, it is an idea for which I am prepared to die.
The South African government of Prime Minister Hendrik Verwoerd was under pressure from liberals at home and abroad to spare the defendants. Nevertheless, the judge sentenced them to life in prison.
The sentence in the case of all the accused will be one of life imprisonment.
As you Lord. Very well, the court will then adjourn.
Nelson Mandela was 44 when he was sentenced to hard labor at South Africa's notorious Robben Island prison.
They were placed in small cells. They did manual labor. They walked off every day to these limestone quarries where they smashed up limestone that would be used to build highways, roads.
Under the National Party's rule, ethnic clashes and violence were rampant. In Mandela's view, by the mid-80s, the enemy was already morally and politically defeated. His strategy, he said, was to give the white rulers every chance to retreat in an orderly way. Mr. Mandela's decision to begin direct and secret negotiations with the white government was one of the most momentous of his life. He made it without consulting his comrades in the African National Congress, knowing full well they would resist. He was released from prison in 1990 at the age of 71. Bill Keller was the New York Times South Africa bureau chief from 1992 to 1995.
It was clearly an electrifying moment. You know, again, it was a symbolic moment because a lot of the important stuff had already happened before then. He'd been negotiating for years, the terms of a deal that would legalize the opposition parties and begin the process of democratizing South Africa. But that was the moment when I think, you know, just in everybody's minds, they just said, oh my God, it's real.
I stand here before you not as a prophet, but as a humble servant.
The South Africa that he walked out into was kind of a mess. I mean, it was the campaign against apartheid had set itself a goal of making the country ungovernable, and to some extent they succeeded. The townships were erupting in violence, and everybody sort of knew that the established order was beginning to crumble, but nobody knew quite what was going to succeed it. So people were very, very anxious.
2 years after Mandela's release from prison, black and white leaders began negotiations that would lead to the end of white rule. All the while, extremists, black and white, continued to use violence to tilt the outcome their way, as Mr. Mandela and the white president, F.W. de Klerk, argued and maneuvered towards a peaceful transfer of power.
The key to the deal was the decision on the part of the ANC that they would share power for the initial stages of a new democracy, and that the president would have two deputy presidents from other parties who would participate in the governance of the country. Having established this constitution, they then had to prepare for something that South Africa had never seen, which was an honest-to-God election campaign in which most Africans got to participate. It was an amazing spectacle. He campaigned in white neighborhoods, too, and went to white events, but the unforgettable thing was to be in one of these small soccer stadiums in an African township. People sitting up on the tin roof, and then you sort of see this sort of dusty trail of cars approaching, and they'd arrive in the middle of the soccer field, and Mandela would get out, and the place would just erupt. And it was, you know, profoundly moving, I have to say. You know, again, elections are just the starting point of democracy, but there is something about watching people get this privilege who've been denied it for a long time that you know, you can't help but be moved.
The African National Congress won 62% of the vote, earning 252 of the 400 seats in Parliament, and ensuring that Mr. Mandela, as party leader, would be named president when the Parliament convened.
He had a cabinet that consisted of some of the people who had been his archenemies. He didn't much like either of his deputy presidents. Thabo Mbeki, who succeeded him, was not Mandela's choice to be his successor. And F.W. de Klerk, who shared a Nobel Prize with Mandela, the two of them had a relationship that kind of seemed to veer between tolerance and loathing.
While Mandela disliked and blamed de Klerk for much of the trouble in South Africa, he did praise him for having the foresight to see the reality of the situation and for having the courage to face it. Many whites ended up despising de Klerk as a sellout.
His presidency was about inventing South Africa. Mandela realized that in order to govern this country, he had to win over some significant percentage of the whites. He had to at least reassure them that there was a place for them, that it was their government too. And the vehicle that he chose for doing that was rugby. And rugby had been historically the Afrikaans sport, the white sport. Blacks didn't play rugby much. In their eye, it had become kind of a symbol of the oppressor's culture. So Mandela took it upon himself to embrace the Springboks, the national rugby team.
South Africa hosted the 1995 Rugby World Cup, and their national team was the Cinderella story of the tournament. They defeated New Zealand 15-12 in the finals.
Mandela came out to present the trophy, and you had the stadium full of white, mostly white Afrikaners, the former ruling race, chanting Mandela's name. His being there sent a message to white South Africans, and their reaction to him sent a message to black South Africans. So it was a singular moment.
The dimensions and effects of poverty are all too familiar. Hunger.
Having delivered the miracle of South Africa's freedom, it was perhaps too much to expect Mr. Mandela to deliver a second miracle of broad prosperity.
He came into office promising a lot in terms of economic advancement. They didn't deliver on those promises. They were probably unrealistic to some degree. You know, the trade-off was that they were not going to confiscate the wealth from whites, and they weren't going to confiscate the land from white landowners. You know, to this day, there's some debate in South Africa over whether or not they should have been more aggressive in doing that. The other side of that argument is look at Zimbabwe, where they did confiscate everything and destroyed their economic infrastructure in the process. You know, he fell short in a number of ways. For one thing, it was becoming clear at that point that South Africa had a devastating AIDS problem. It didn't get the attention that it really needed under Mandela's regime, and so he has to be faulted for that.
Later in life, Mandela spoke out about the need for safe sex and cheaper antiretroviral drugs. In 2005, he would share publicly that his eldest son had died of AIDS.
One of the most important things he did as president was step down, which is not a usual thing in new democracies.
When Mandela left the presidency in 1999, Thabo Mbeki, who was not his pick for successor, took over.
Post-presidency,
difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind.
I don't mind, I don't mind, I don't mind, I don't mind, I don't mind. I've been to the mountaintop. He's allowed me to go, and I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I might not get there with you, but we as a people, we get to the promised land. And Dr. King was, could not fathom opening these doors up, and we are not doing what we're supposed to do. He thought if he opened the doors up, that we would fight back. and we would bring our brothers and sisters in with us. This is our 7 o'clock hour coffee tea. A conversation with me, Dorothy Wright Tillman, at the great WVON 1690. Our number is 773-591-1690. We are streaming live, www.wvon.com. We're on Facebook, Black Planet, iHeartRadio. We're also on Twitter. So we're not going to go into our little black moment just today, because Mandela is our black moment. We do used to do black, because I want to get into Jerry and really get to talking to him about this whole South African piece, and also get to your calls, because the forum is lit up. But I must go to this teacher, this great teacher, Jerry Herman, who joined us this morning to talk about Nelson Mandela. When I thought about talking about South Africa, Nelson Mandela, I couldn't think of a greater person than Jerry Herman. Good morning, Jerry. Locking me in, Courtney. Jerry?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. We're back for 45, for the next 45 minutes, almost an hour, is going to be your classroom. Because we, am I getting the echo, Courtney? I'm kind of getting an echo-like. I don't know, I'm getting some feedback in here, Courtney. I don't know whether you're getting it over there. Jerry, are you getting any feedback?
No, I think it's pretty good.
Okay, well, I'm just getting feedback on my end. Courtney's going to come see. Anyways, what I want to do, Jerry, I want to talk about, I really want to begin to talk about South Africa, the state of South Africa, where it was when Mandela was fighting, at first when he started fighting. I want to talk about ANC, the PAC, that whole struggle around that movement and where we are today and what is it like in South Africa today. So let's talk about the whole apartheid movement in South Africa. That was in South Africa that led to the incarceration of Nelson Mandela.
Well, as you know, Dorothy Wright Tillman, it was a long struggle, as was the struggle for civil rights here,
mm-hmm.
really human rights. A lot of people died along the way in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It had a middle class of sorts orientation in the beginning because there were school teachers and professional people who founded the ANC,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of had that sense of itself throughout, but it couldn't sustain itself with mm-hmm. those kinds of folks, so it had to reach out to the masses of people, and through good organizing and outreach, they built a tremendous movement, and of course they had, as we know, tremendous leadership from Sisulu, Mbeki,
mm-hmm.
And a whole host of folks who were both jailed and suffered a good deal, along with Nelson Mandela, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Nelson could not have done what he was able to accomplish alone. It takes a lot of personalities and perseverance to have those kinds of achievements, and we just cannot forget all of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
By really great people with a lot of integrity who were not able to be bought along the way, and they kept in the fight.
Right, and Winnie played a major role in that mobilization and organizing, did she not?
Oh, she was incredible, and
mm-hmm.
I think even today people both in South Africa and around the world and in the U.S. particularly feel that she was kind of pushed to the side, but really she was a soldier.
Yes.
Who had issues, as soldiers do have.
Uh-huh.
And she did what she thought she had to do, and she was under tremendous pressure by the government.
Right.
So the ANC leadership had come to her and said, look, get those young people, so-called Mandela Club, out of your house, which she ultimately did, but that was the government's entree to place people inside of her house to do mischief, which
mm-hmm.
they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think people who watched the struggle in South Africa develop knew that she was a victim.
She was.
On many levels.
Well,
to being denied family
mm-hmm.
and all the support that allows. Yeah, she was a tremendous person, along with a lot of other women in the ANC women's movement and other movements within the country.
Well, the women in South Africa was very strong and very involved in that movement.
Central.
And they don't play that up in terms of that movement. what the women did in South Africa and the role that they played. They just kind of like smoothed it over. Mandela went to jail, spent 27 years. He got out, and he was president, and he forgave everybody and all his love. And South Africa is a better place now because he walked out of jail and said he forgave everybody. And they're really not looking at all the suffering and stuff that's going on in South Africa. Even as we speak today, the whole land question in South Africa, the whole question of I don't know how the education system is. We talked about unemployment, Jerry, in South Africa last night. What is unemployment in South Africa?
Well, among youth, it's about 48%.
Mm.
And that's youth between 15 and roughly 25.
Mm-hmm.
Among women, it's 52%. I mean, those are humongous numbers. Overall unemployment for the country, which is now about 53 million people,
mm-hmm.
is about 24%. So those are huge numbers to have unemployed, meaning they're not contributing to the economy.
Mm-hmm.
They're not consuming. They're not making anything. Yeah, you can't have that large portion of your population uninvolved in the economy. But if I could just make one point having to do with the women, I think we've got to give real credit there because they carried that movement.
Uh-huh.
They were the people who went to the meetings, who argued, who carried out the directives from the leadership. I mean, they carried that movement forward. And Winnie was one of the folks. She was a younger person.
Very young woman. She lost her husband, went to jail when she was left with two babies to raise and to carry on that fight and that struggle.
Nearly a year that she spent in solitary confinement.
Right.
And then removed from Soweto and put out in a small town that she had to try to survive. I mean, that, you know, we have to appreciate that kind of perseverance and resistance to power,
right,
wherever it takes place.
That's right. Jerry, when Mandela got out of prison, one of the things that they said that let's talk about the corporation. When he got out of prison, and they were saying all was well, and they was kissing and making up. We in Chicago had to lift the sanctions. All around the country was trying to lift sanctions, and Burke introduced the ordinance in city council to lift the sanctions in Chicago, and I opposed the ordinance, and we had hearings. You brought PAC and ANC people all to the hearing. Why don't we talk about those reasons why I know why I opposed a lifting sanction? It was really to give Mandela and the ANC some leverage with these corporations for the council. My position was that if we lift sanctions right now, he don't have any leverage. So let's talk about those sanctions for a moment and why it was important probably to keep those sanctions in place until he had leverage.
It was important to put the sanctions in place. You know, tremendous struggle that took place there. I'm amazed at some of the hypocrisy in Washington, in the Congress. These people resisted from Reagan, not only the leadership, Reagan and the Secretary of State, but deep into the Republican and the Democrats drug their feet on supporting sanctions. Because, well, one, the South African government and the U.S. corporations resisted sanctions. They didn't want to lose a dime while they would give mouth service to, you know, that how bad apartheid was. But you have to do something to change it.
Right.
And they didn't want to do. So my point was that, first, that was a tremendous struggle that took not just a year. It took decades to make that happen. And one of the things that the great organizers in this country, all across the country, including yourself, said, look, if government won't do it, we will go in the streets to the communities with the state and municipal divestment campaign, which happened, so that people at the local levels had a chance to add their sense of this thing, and a lot of struggle took place. In Philadelphia, for example, which was one of the first cities to pass a strong divestment local piece of legislation, moving those pension funds away from any corporation doing business in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that kind of shook. But still, it took years. It wasn't just overnight.
Right.
And it took years to get to that point. And so citizens too.
Mm-hmm.
When the call came for the raising of sanctions, needed to voice their sense, because the ANC meeting with really hard-line South African Afrikaners, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Government people,
mm-hmm.
they need as much leverage as they could get. And most of us think they gave in too soon because they enshrined the concept of private property in their new constitution.
So in the constitution, when they wrote the constitution, you're saying that they put the private property, which gave the private people the right to buy the land, which means 18% of the people own 80% of the land in South Africa. Am I correct?
Right. It gave them the opportunity to maintain the land relationship,
mm-hmm.
a minority population controlling the majority of the land, 16%
mm-hmm.
of the population controlling essentially 83-84% of
mm-hmm.
the land, which has not changed, I might add, except
mm-hmm.
In a very small way. I mean, one of the things that we know that in South Africa, reading South African newspapers, people admit the most explosive issue in South Africa, as it was in Zimbabwe, is the land issue.
And they're and it's really a movement going on there now that's getting ready to really explode. Like you said, explosive. I mean, they're getting ready to really, really, you know, it's like this. When President Mandela came out and was elected, I think the community was expecting something that didn't really. And that's not to take away his leadership and where he was and what he did, but the truth of the matter is South African stuff. What I want to do is play this little clip, Jerry, and then I want you to kind of talk about it. I want
uh-huh.
to put this clip where one of his top persons was talking about what caused that movement and how the land was taken away. I'll play this, Courtney.
Mr. Ramaphosa, you experienced the brutalities of apartheid, like so many of the black population. You and your family were forcibly resettled, and you went to the township of Soweto. Can you tell me what that was like, that experience of this brutal regime?
The apartheid regime's key cruel hallmark was not only in oppressing the majority of South Africans, but also enforcing its will on black South Africans. And that will was enforced through the jackboot, through removal, as they embarked on their social engineering. They moved people from where they had been born, where they had grown up, and moved them to the dusty, arid parts of the country. As they were trying to clean up Johannesburg, they moved people from a place called Sophiatown, Western Native Township, where I was born, and we were moved en masse. Trucks would just arrive in the morning and just load up everything that you possessed, destroyed the houses, and you were just moved because they were making way for white people to live peacefully without being disturbed by the presence of black people in a particular area.
It sounds familiar. Jerry, Jerry, before I want you to comment on that, but for my audience, it sounds familiar in all of the country, from Mississippi to Chicago, where they're still moving black people so that white people could be comfortable. Where they moved all the public housing, they're moving in Chicago. There was a massive move, closing schools and moving people. So the strategy that they have used since the transatlantic slave and the social engineering he talked about is still going on. So when he said they moved people massively off of their land, are those people back on their land now?
No. Well, to be quite frank, very small numbers are that could prove that they were removed illegally. Well, who controls the legal system?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, very small.
Well, we got the government now. They should be able to control it. The black folks are in charge, aren't they?
Well, they're in charge of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, and one of the things that when Mandela was in prison, they kept him so long that when he got out, he was an older person, as we know. And so he only spent 5 years in office, and that was such a time of turmoil that he didn't have an opportunity to put in place cadre of folks working under him who had integrity and were incorruptible. And I say that because corruption is rampant in South Africa because the white population understands that there are folks within the structure who will take money and not related to the problems in their society. Well, we got problems in this country. We got a Washington, D.C. We got a Congress that's as corrupt. So I'm not dumping on
I understand. We said in this country, everywhere else, you got these people who don't understand that there was either they are there to take care of the needs of the people. They begin to think it's for themselves.
That's right.
And what happens, then the public suffers. And because black folks are basically tribal, and we have a sense of when – it's just like when I look at our country and the stuff that's going on, our unemployment numbers seem the same as what you're talking about in South Africa. All the stuff that's going on, but black folks are not doing anything because they're waiting. They're waiting. They think something's going to happen magically. But as you said, Mandela, who had been in prison for 27 years, and different generations of people had grown up, teenagers had gotten bigger, his children had come about, and so he really did not – I think you told me something about – in this book that you're going to send me, that where he credited Winnie for keeping him alive while he was in prison. Am I correct?
Yeah, in fact, most of the news accounts, when they talk about Winnie at all, talk about, especially in his book, and not Long Walk to Freedom, but there was a couple others. When he said that her letters sustained him through the terrible times, and he only got one every six months. So those had to be powerful love letters.
Mm-hmm.
And that got him through, you know, the difficulties of Robben Island. You know, and one shouldn't lessen that because that's family, that's love, that's, you know, that's the significant folks in one's life to give you the kind of support you need when people are pressing you down.
Right. He said he knew he had love and a family back here waiting for him. I was talking to a reporter who came by my house the other day, and she was telling me that they allowed Winnie to come spend 2 days with him, his last 2 days of life, that she was able to spend some time with him while he was making his transition, which I thought was really good.
It's tremendous because, look, Mandela's current wife is Graca Machel. Now, you know Graca Machel was Samora Machel's wife.
Another revolutionary.
That's right. The president of Mozambique that the South Africans killed, and Mandela and Graca together could not uncover who, in fact, the culprits were. Well, we know because the Pit Boter, who was the foreign minister, perhaps one of the real vicious people within the P.W. Boter government and the F.W. de Klerk government, I might add, was on the scene of the crash within an hour after it took place. So they knew what happened.
Right.
What happened, they directed the plane into a mountain as it was trying to land in Mozambique, which you know, southern part of South Africa is connected to Mozambique, not far from the capital.
Well, you know what happened when people talk about South Africa, the president, they don't think of, especially black Americans, most folks don't think about, most people, American, most people, period, don't think of South Africa being a country with a president. Mandela was president of South Africa. They had structure in terms of government. They had governors. How many governors did they have in South Africa? That was governors.
What?
Just like we have governors here. Governor, we have a governor, Hikwin. We have governors all over this country. South African have governors too. And what was their relationship to the president?
Well, there are nine provinces, so most are ANC dominated, but the KwaZulu-Land, or I think it's called Mpumalanga now, was Zulu controlled, and a part of the Cape, part of the Cape is in fact controlled by another political party. But still, it seems to me there's no excuse for not having moved more aggressively in a whole range of areas, education, especially housing. I mean, you have to make sure all of your people have indoor toilets and running water. And a good 17% of folks in South Africa don't have indoor plumbing. I mean, you have to make that kind of happened. And I'm not, look, Mandela is a tremendous figure in his own right, but something didn't happen, and he didn't have the time to do it. He was only out and in position for 5 years.
He didn't have the time nor the power. I mean, those people still stayed in place. We have to talk about power, and I don't think this world or this country, and especially South Africa, want us to look at the power. They never want blacks to move from a power position. And Mandela had a lot of integrity. He understood, and I think, and I'm going to try to find that clip, and maybe I'll play it another day, but he really addressed what was going on and how disappointed he was with what was going on with his people and what was going on out in the township and how this had not brought the necessary things that people in the township and out in the bush and stuff needed. Now, I remember when they had Theo, I was reading somewhere, but now let's, before I go to what I was reading, Jerry, people keep forgetting about South Africa diamond mines. Nobody talk about that. The diamond mines during that time where men was forced to do an x-ray every day to make sure they didn't have any diamonds up their butts. That was one of the fights that we had about during the 60s. We hollered about stop the x-raying, and we said can't get oil from a Rockefeller well, can't get diamonds from the mine, can't get anything. They're coming out, and they had to do x-rays on them up their butts every day they came out to make sure they didn't steal their own diamonds. Am I correct?
You are absolutely correct. And in fact, some of those diamond fields,
mm-hmm.
because they also controlled Namibia at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the diamond fields in Namibia no longer have the diamonds. They so expleted the diamonds in those fields. It's massive extraction of resources from South Africa. Can I say from Namibia? Can I say from Congo?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. From the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
The trucks roll constantly to the ports, taking out the resources. China is one of South Africa's major exporters now.
China is exporting resources from all over the continent.
I mean, the export commodities just from South Africa, gold, diamonds, and platinum, and China, Japan, and Germany are the key export partners.
Mm-hmm.
So I worry about the continent because they're losing so many resources at such exorbitantly low prices that nothing is returning to the continent to be reinvested, to be used to build itself. It's a worrisome thing, especially when we're dealing with a country like China, which has so many needs.
Mm-hmm.
And their strategic reserves, they are just filling it up with mm-hmm. goods from the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
It's a worrisome trend.
Well, the thing I see, the similarity between Africa and the descendants of enslaved Africans in America and throughout the diaspora, you know, when you look at Haiti, the reason they were able to take all the resources from Haiti instead of the people, there's I think it's from the transatlantic slave over in terms of what their blueprint was. I don't think these people would have vied away from their blueprint. Even though President Mandela got out of jail, he was strong and he was fighting and he came. Those people stayed in power. That's why when you see the clerk smiling and all I'm saying, we want to think this freedom fighter, not so much of the bloodshed, but the resource question. And I think that I don't know whether they was able to reach out. And that was one of the things we were saying in the council was that we need to get people to go over there and set up factories and set up things and to train and begin to train the masses into the things that they needed to run the country. That was one of the things that we said in the hearing, that we needed to make sure they was trained and they got their hands on the resources. So the masses don't have the resources. So what do we do, Jerry?
They've got to figure out a way to get access to the resources, stanch the flood of resource blood, as in stop it. And when it does, when they do sell it, and to some extent that they must, but it must be at a price that's reasonable,
mm-hmm.
not cheap. Can I make a couple of other points?
Of course, you're the teacher today. This is your classroom.
No. the way they engineered the South African government under Mandela into place by making sure that there were some people who were not there. And I come back to Chris Hani, who was the ANC underground guerrilla army leader.
They killed him too, didn't they?
They killed him. I mean, they allowed. Well, two things. He had come back in because he could after Mandela was out of prison and that things were opening up. But one morning he went out to get some stuff out of his car and was shot to death by quote unquote a crazed European. So the point is, how did that happen?
Uh-huh.
It had to be engineered. Mm-hmm. So that important person who also said, and he had said very publicly when they talked about blacks not taking power for at least 5 years, he said, no, that cannot happen. We have to move quickly on these whole range of matters. And he was taken out.
Well, now he knew, Jerry, that if you wait for 5 years, you wouldn't get no power at all. And if you see now, blacks don't have power. Even though you have symbolic people in place, there's no power. There's no power relationship with blacks in government right now, blacks, period. Even economics in terms of they have little small businesses and stuff, but they still don't have the power.
Well, they don't control anything in the diamond industry, in the chromium industry, in the manganese industry, in the vanadium industry, or the platinum. I mean, that's what sells to the outside world because highly militaristic Western states, including China,
mm-hmm.
They need those kinds
and America,
of
America and Europe and France and all
and
of them.
US
mm-hmm.
to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't run their planes. We can't put catalytic converters into our cars.
Can't have cell phones.
All of it, you know. So unless you get control of some of that outflow, can you do good things for your country? And you got to have integrity, which Mandela did and does have.
Yeah, he had he had integrity. His spirit, he still have integrity. He just that might be why he said, "Look, I'm out of here, so I can go on and begin to continue to fight." Because even after he stepped down, that's when he really began to fight on behalf of those people out in the township. He was really a voice for them.
But the secondary leadership under him, I mean, that's where the failing, I think, is. Not to say that there aren't some good people there, but what that system in South Africa, the world system, is that if you offer enough money, if you offer enough things, you can compromise people. And once they take money and are compromised, they can never recalibrate their integrity. That's over.
Well, it's not just in South Africa. That's here and everywhere else. And if you don't,
absolutely.
Jerry, you know, if you don't, they come after you, and because you know I'm a living example how they come after you, and they try to make sure that people, those same people who are revering Mandela today would not have been seen on the same stage, the same street, or even brought his name out of their mouth. In fact, they thought all of us was crazy who were fighting to free Mandela and fighting for not just the free Mandela but also for South Africa, which means that you went on the college. What the role that the college student played? Because when we had the we brought all of these college students from South Africa, we brought them from all over outside of South Africa. We had a retreat at the Duncan YMCA. Mary McKeeba, who had been really banded from South Africa, the government had banded her. But Mary McKeeba, Cindy Portier, Nipsey Russell, Harry Belafonte, and many others had a fundraiser. Diane Nash was involved in that fundraiser, and Beville was too, but a fundraiser at McCormick Place so that we could pay for these students who came here. And that's when I really, really began to understand the whole South African movement. I don't know, my audience was listening, any of you remember Rua Chiri? Chiri was very involved in that movement. They pushed him, they say he jumped in front of a train in New York, Jerry. We all believe they pushed him. You know, I got my first taste of British CIA at the Duncan YMCA when we were mobilizing and organizing. They disrupted and they tore up that retreat to make sure that we had that we didn't care out what we had to do. Now this college and you worked. Let's talk about the role that the college. I hear people so often like, well, these old folks won't give us the mantle. Didn't nobody give us no mantle. We took it and we fought. Mandela took it and he fought. And the role of the students on the college campus, do you want to talk about working with the college campus?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were a critical element to the anti-apartheid movement, not only at the college level, but at the high school level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were those in the anti-apartheid movement who only wanted to organize on the Ivy League campuses. And one of the things we said to them is, no, because this is a huge country. Mm-hmm. We've got to get into these high schools and the 3,000 or more colleges in the United States and bring these people to a level of awareness about how they are invested in mm-hmm. South Africa.
And so that's
what happened.
That helped with the fighting for this divestment in South Africa, too, because a lot of these little students, the white students, really began to move. And I want to thank you for working with those students. Now, Jerry, what I want to do is take a couple of calls. I could just listen to you all day, but this board is lit up. I don't know how to do this. I'm going to try and see what I can do here. Madeline, how you doing?
Oh, I'm fine, Dorothy.
Make it short, because I got about 15 minutes. I want to hear some more of Jerry.
I am, and I'm really enjoying the conversation.
Okay.
Because when you brought up in the matter about the student participation in apartheid, I was at Northwestern University in the early 70s,
uh-huh.
and we started, along with so many other colleges, as your guest Jerry is saying. Unfortunately, I did not know her personally at that time, but Eva Jefferson was the student at Northwestern, and she was the main leader who started that protest, and it was really about forcing Northwestern to divest itself of all the stock holding that it had in South Africa. And so the students, we were really, really instrumental in forcing these universities and colleges, like she's saying, around the country to divest themselves of their stock holdings in South Africa, because they really didn't want to do it because, of course, we know there was so much money involved in that.
Okay, well, thank you, Madeline. You held a long time. I thank you for holding that long. I want to get back to Jerry. I'm going to take one more call.
Sure.
I'm going to try to get back to Jerry because we don't have but a few minutes. Those people who are listening, holding on, I'm trying to get to you, but I'm trying. D, can you give me 30 seconds?
Yeah, real quick. I don't think Nelson Mandela deserves all of the heroism he's getting. I think Winnie Mandela is a true hero, in my humble opinion. As a matter of fact, you all kind of touched on it. Winnie Mandela was very critical and critical of Nelson Mandela, called him a sellout. She was very detailed.
I think that Mandela deserved what he's getting, but I think we should not leave Winnie out.
Well, he didn't start speaking objectively until Winnie called him out. Winnie said to come out and take a no-veil peace pact with the oppressor.
Well, come on, I think he deserves
all the poor people. That's what she was accusing him of doing, and that was great evidence to support that. So I think anytime a bunch of white people in power start celebrating him when he died, we got to look at.
Well, you know, they always celebrate us when we die. Yeah. They celebrate Dr. King.
Well,
always celebrate.
He's doing the same thing, you know. Power with the people and sacrificing the least of these. The Bible says you judge one's greatness by how they treat the least of these.
Okay, now I got to go back to Jerry.
Sacrifice his poor people. Wendy Mandela is the hero, in my opinion.
Thank you. I think that they were equal, and I think we can say both. Jerry, what do you got to say about both of those calls?
Well, let me just say on the first, and Madeline, thank her, and we all should be, for recognizing how to organize and struggle on those campuses to make things happen. On the anti-slavery movement, as we know from the new book out, Ebony and Ivy,
mm-hmm.
that all of the major Ivy League colleges, the presidents held slaves,
mm-hmm.
the professors held slaves, and we had great students at that time to attack the institution of slavery. The Civil War may have not happened, probably would have, and that slavery would have come to an end earlier here. So it's been great. Now, on Winnie Mandela, you know, she was tremendous what she did and carried that fight while he was jailed. And it did not look good what happened after. But
mm-hmm.
there is, you know, always the attempt.
Well, it didn't look good, Jerry. But that's what they did. For they tried to bring some division there. They thought it would divide.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was an organized effort to destroy her and take away her support systems.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just as if if they are now saying about Mandela, and the great personality that he certainly is, a great politician, and probably the one who made things happen, and perhaps he was the only one, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot, and for folks to suggest that he is the only major person of this time, the kinds of folks who think that this country is just exceptional. No, we've got great folks both in the country and around the world.
And Mandela understood that, and he always made sure that he people know that was the those who have.
There's some blogs going on about Mandela must not have been a tremendous personality because he invited Castro and Gaddafi and all these people to his inauguration as president.
But Gaddafi and Castro and all of them were the ones who stood with him. See, that's what they got two things they're framing. On one hand, they got this white press and whites talking about he was a great person and he forgave and don't worry about it. We all going to be in harmony while I take all the land and all the resources. And the other hand, you got the other group of whites over there talking about he was with Castro and Gaddafi. Well, what's wrong with Gaddafi? You know what?
Yeah, I mean, these are tremendous personalities, people of real integrity, including Hugo Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not to understand it because there are folks in this country who don't like these people for their own politics to put that on the rest of us. You know, Mandela, the greatness came out when he invited those people, and Arafat, and you know, a whole host of people. He didn't play those kinds of games as well as when he challenged the U.S. directly on its invasion of Iraq.
Yes, he did.
And did it publicly.
Yes,
didn't back off.
Yeah, he was very strong. He had to get up out of that mess called the so-called government and go and do some other things. I'm gonna try to take two calls, and I hope they be 30 seconds. I'm going to take you all. If you go past your little minute I'm giving you because I want Jerry to teach you. I don't need you teaching this morning. A man song.
Hey, you wasn't directing that at me.
I'm directing it at the whole place because I don't have a 15 minutes, and I don't get Jerry very often.
Hey, well, first of all, I appreciate you, Dorothy, and your guests.
Thank you.
You're giving a wealth of information. And, of course, we can't let these folks be framing Mandela like, oh, he wasn't bitter. You know what I'm saying? That's what they're emphasizing. And, you know, I had to turn the TV off because Rahm Emanuel, both Bushes, they were reading statements.
But what's funny about Rahm, man, son, is they're still chasing the folks who was with Hitler during their Holocaust. They said never no more. Anybody can say never no more but us.
And also those Zionists, that's who gave South Africa the Boers, the atomic bomb or whatever, you know, the nuclear, the germ weapons to kill black people. You know, so I had to turn the TV off. But I also wanted to let you know, Sister Dorothy, that I used to travel with Rua Chiri. He was one of my leaders.
Oh, so you know, I'm so glad somebody knew Chiri. They pushed him off that track in New York. He didn't jump.
Yeah,
he wasn't a person that would have committed suicide.
That was the Secret Service people from Rhodesia. Behind that, and even South Africa, we imagine. I traveled with him. Me and him went to the Gary Convention together. I was in his organization, the United Africans from One Motherland International. We got to talk about it.
Yeah, well, you know, Chiri was one of the ones that was working with us when we brought all the students from all over South Africa to this.
Oh, he was a tremendous.
Oh, I love that man.
He taught Sarozai, me, Chabanduka, all of us back in the day. And I named my oldest son Marua after him in honor of him.
Okay, well, I got to go, but we have to talk about it. I'm so glad somebody called because they knew Chiri. Thank you, Master.
Okay, right on, sir.
Thank you. I'm sorry, y'all. We just don't. One more. Come on, and then Jerry, I'm going to come back to you in a minute. I'm going to take three calls real quick, and then Jerry, you're going to talk.
Right.
Maceo.
Yeah, good morning, Alderman Tillman, and good morning, Mr. Herman.
In answer
to your question about the educational system, you still have apartheid education for the indigenous population in South Africa, just like you have the Jim Crow education for our people, our children here. And I agree with both of you in terms of the grassroots, the masses were so important in that movement there, just like they were here, as you know, Alderman Tillman, Montgomery, Alabama, with that bus boycott, 65% of the sales of the bus company went down as a result of the masses. And then with the Garvey movement as well, and I was at the inner cities, Carruthers inner cities yesterday for the lecture for Dr. Carr, and one of our elders, his name escapes me because I just woke up, but he was saying that until we do that today, until we get the masses involved,
I got to hurry and go now, Mason.
We can't move forward. We
I
have
agree.
To get the masses.
We
got to
get them. Thank you, Mason. Thank you so much. Will, hurry up. I'm trying to get...
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning to you guests and to the VON family. I'll make this right quick. If we're doing the right thing by honoring this great man and his legacy and his life, but we're leaving out something equally as important, and that is the evilness of those who did it to those people at that time.
The Holocaust, who did it then, and still doing it.
Yeah, well,
and because we're not dealing with it, we're allowing it to continue to happen.
We cannot leave that out, the evilness of those Europeans that would treat him like that and those people that were under him and that are still doing it to the people over there now. Please don't leave that part.
Thank you, the Afrikaners and what they did. It was just something else. Maurice, 30 seconds, because I got 5 minutes and I want Jerry to end it. Maurice?
Yes, ma'am. Real quick. Good morning, everybody.
Look, good morning.
With this smartphone I got, I can visit South Africa as much as I want and get the whole recorded history of it. No problem. Don't have to go there. Look, economically in South Africa, you're absolutely right. The minority population is still dominating the majority, black folks, just wearing them out economically. We got to figure out how to get mines. Those resources are just as much as dollars as anybody else.
Thank you.
Agree?
Thank you so much. Thank you. Reverend Weatherspoon, 10 seconds.
Yeah, Dorothy, it's just time to talk business, economic development, South Africa, transport some of the gold and the silver diamond to America. I talk business.
You mean the black Americans?
Business.
Okay. Thank you, Reverend Weatherspoon. Sakia, 30 seconds. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, 30 seconds.
Yes, I would like to ask the question, can you expound quickly on the TBS special they showed last night where Mandela would send letters to the government every month, and they would send him to a special compound.
Okay.
And ANC members didn't know anything about it.
Thank you. Okay, Jerry? Jerry?
Well, the South African government of the day under de Klerk and P.W. Botha were trying to shape the outcome of the violence in the street, and they were trying to isolate Mandela from the other leadership. That's why they moved him first to Polesmoor and then to Victor Verster prison. And I think in that special last night, they talked a little bit about his worry that the ANC leadership would not understand what he was doing. But can I make an additional point to the second caller? Yes.
Uh-huh.
Having to do with F.W. Dick and whether or not Mandela was bitter. In one of the pieces of
that was someone else. Uh-huh.
F.W. de Klerk challenges Mandela on the issue of violence and why didn't he refute violence as a means of struggle.
I was trying to find that to play it. I couldn't find it, Jerry. Uh-huh.
Mandela came back, if they want to talk about him being bitter, and said essentially, you don't have the right to challenge the ANC on the issue of violence. Given the amount of violence that you've engaged in, you killed, well, he didn't say this, this is Herman, 1 million people you killed in Mozambique with RENAMO, 1 million people you killed in Angola with UNITA, to say nothing of the 30,000 people you killed in Zimbabwe in that struggle. I'm talking about actual South African troops, because in Zimbabwe, South African troops participated in all they participated.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you don't have the right. And then if I could just add an additional thing, the killing of Lumumba,
mm-hmm.
a man of integrity.
Right.
And when our government participated and gave the okay to the Belgians to go ahead and kill him,
right.
as if he was a dog or something, it went on and on. And so for these people to talk about violence and nonviolence, they don't have the right to utter or suggest that other folks should not engage in violence given what they did. And as far as F.W. de Klerk being a reputable person, he passed on power to Mandela because he understood with the amount of blood on his hands, people wanted to try him.
Mm-hmm.
And his out was to go to the commission that Tutu oversaw and try to get out of it. And he actually refused to testify.
Right, and I'm glad you answered this question about them moving him around, because that's the way it was presented is to make you think that Mandela had sold ANC out, which was not correct. He never once sold them out.
Well,
you
he
know.
Didn't have any control.
Right.
I mean, he understood what was taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, when the first speech he gave when he came out, if you look at the white leadership, they were stunned that he was speaking so powerfully, direct and focused,
mm-hmm.
and making sense. They didn't think that was everybody was an old man.
Well, one of the things he said was that if we're going to defeat this enemy, we got to study him, know his language, his culture, and understand what to do with him. I mean, he said we got to speak his language, got to understand his culture, so we got to study this man. And we have to understand as black people and as a people that we have to study and understand. That's what they've done to us. They studied our movement, and they have really played a role in trying to destroy it. But if this movement is going to continue, Jerry, it's going to have to be carried on by the students and everybody else. But no, they always say, why don't we pass the torch? Nobody didn't give you no torch. I think you snatched it, did you not? You snatched it and got involved in it. Nobody came and said, Jerry, here's your torch. You start marching. You did it because it was right to do it.
Absolutely. And as Mandela has made the point, that you're going to pay for it.
Right.
But it's worth it.
Well,
and I think that's something we all ought to take inside of ourselves and live by.
Okay.
That we have to get involved. We have to struggle. And, yes, there are going to be some consequences for it.
30 seconds to sum up. 30 seconds, Jerry. I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for being. I'm going to have you back because we got to do some more talking about the continent. We salute and our spirit goes out to Mandela. And thank you so much. Hold on, Jerry. I'm going to talk to you when I get off the air. Just hold on. You've been listening to Talk of Coffee, Tea, and a Conversation with me, Dorothy Wright Tillman, 1690 WVOE. And every Saturday morning from 6 to 8, you can join us. We like fine wine to get up and drink this coffee with us. Today, I'm getting ready to go over to the senior breakfast at the House of Hope. At 8, of, I think it started 8 or 9, I'm one of the hosts, so y'all meet me over there. I'm going to leave here and go over there. Until then, until next week, reparations now.
Mandela's first television interview. I asked him what it was that the African really wanted.
The Africans require, want the franchise on the basis of one man, one vote. They want political independence.
Do you see Africans being able to develop in this country without the European being pushed out?
We have made it very clear in our policy that South Africa is a country of many races. There is room for all the various races in this country.
Are there many educated Africans?